Hello, friends. It's time for the News Talk 94.9 WSJM Morning Announcements with yours truly, Jim Gifford, and my partner in crime, Spencer Rivers. Brought to you by the good people at Special Light Indicator in Benton Harbor. And there is a good chance that you have walked through a special light door when you go into a local restaurant or visit a school or a store or walk into a manufacturing plant. So thank you to Special Light Indicator in Benton Harbor and enjoy your morning announcements.
Rain, huh? I guess that means it's a good thing that I finally got the leaves picked up on Friday afternoon. So there is that. Hey, good morning, everybody. 12 after 6. Jim Gifford here, flying solo this week. Mike Gardy is taking care of the news in a remote situation, and Spencer is off this week, a little vacation time. I think he told me he was going to spend today swapping out all the laces in his shoes for Velcro. So she's got something to keep him busy. It's 6:12. We begin page one of your morning announcements with the weekend in review here, and we'll start you off with this morning. This slipped past over the course of the weekend while we were busy doing other things, and that is the 57th anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy slipping by over the weekend. People of a certain age, that includes me and probably you, almost always play that "where were you when" game, if and when that comes up in conversation or when the anniversary rolls around every year. For me, fourth grade recess, Butternut Elementary School, North Homestead, Ohio. That's where I was. I remember that mainly because we were at recess and we were right next door to, in fact, there were so many kids in that elementary school. It was an old building. We overflowed into the junior high school, which was next door. And we had a couple of classes. Our fourth grade classes were actually in the junior high school. So we were out at recess, and all of a sudden, the junior high kids are coming out of the building, and they're all crying, and we had no idea what was going on, because, you know, we were out on the monkey bars, and there was no radio or anything out there. And then finally, the words started to filter down as to what had happened. But I don't remember much beyond that, which is not particularly weird for me, because my memory is very spotty, weird, and awful in many cases. But I do remember that vividly. All of these, you know, when you're in fourth grade, you look up to junior high school kids as pretty much adults. And actually, I think many of them were smoking. Speaking of that, out on the playground during our recess. So we thought that was cool. But anyway, I remember that very vividly. But beyond that, I don't remember going home watching it on TV. I don't remember talking about it with the folks or the family. That's all a blur or just gone. But my memory of that is as such. Charles Kuralt will take us back here for how it all came down 57 years ago on the 22nd of November.
And now for the next 30 minutes, As the World Turns.
For viewers of the CBS soap opera, As the World Turns, first word came at about 1:40 p.m. Eastern time. It happened too quickly for cameras to be in place.
And I gave it a great deal of thought, Grandpa.
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
Then it was back to the soap opera, but not for long. Soon after, Walter Cronkite was back, reporting from the CBS newsroom, complete with rotary telephones and wire machines.
This picture has just been transmitted by wire. It is a picture taken just a moment or two before the incident. If you can zoom in with that camera, we can get a closer look at this picture.
And almost exactly 1 hour after his initial bulletin, this now famous announcement.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th president of the United States.
That's how she went down 57 years ago over the on the 22nd of November. So a remembrance, certainly, as I said, for people of a certain age, myself included. So we had that over the course of the weekend. Also had a goodly number of things planned at the household over the weekend. I actually did finally, and I'm sure the neighbors are celebrating. They may very well have even had a party without my knowledge after the fact. But I did finally get the leaves in the front yard cleaned up so that they wouldn't blow around in everybody else's yard. Although I noticed last night that there's more. I thought they'd all come down, but apparently not. There's always more. There is always more. It drives me nuts. But anyway, things here are things that I planned. Well, maybe that's too strong a term. Things I thought about doing over the weekend, and then the reasons I didn't. Hanging Christmas lights. Winterizing power equipment, cleaning out gutters, looking into auto insurance options. Now, I know what you're thinking. How come I can't lead that kind of an exciting life, huh? Well, here are the reasons I came up with not to do those things. Hanging Christmas lights, that one was easy. It's raining, and plus the lights aren't unpacked yet. So they're still hidden somewhere in the basement. As far as winterizing the power equipment, this one actually had kind of a legitimate reason. I'm not absolutely sure that I'm done with the leaf blower and the lawn tractor and the chainsaw and the weed whacker. Weed whacker, probably. But the others, especially after noticing that there's more freaking leaves up front, I'm not sure that I'm done with all that yet. Plus it was raining, so there was that. Then cleaning out the gutters, again, an easy one there. It's raining, and I'm, you know, I could slip and break a hip, and no one wants that, least of all me. And then, the insurance thing, do I really need an excuse for not doing that one? I'm coming up on renewal time, which is why I got that notification from the agency the other day that I have to make some decisions now that we don't have the the old health care provision that we did in recent times in your car insurance plan. So now I've got to make some decisions there, and I just didn't want to look at that. It was just, you know, simple as that. And then, of course, I had the universal excuse for all of that stuff, and that was, there's a game on. So, you know, there's football. And that's just kind of an umbrella or just an all-encompassing excuse, and you can use that for virtually anything. And there was some decent football over the course of the weekend, including, how about them Hoosiers? They nearly pulled off a big one there, upset over the Buckeyes at the Horseshoe. Didn't quite happen, but boy, they look competitive. They've got themselves a program going down there at the Indiana University. So good for them. And then onto the Wolverines. I don't know. Are we celebrating this? I'm not sure. Rutgers? All them overtimes? Really? Rutgers? Mr. Harbaugh seemed reasonably happy with the results there. Said his kids are having fun. I'm not so sure that U of M fans are having fun with this. But hey, they pulled out the win there, so. And they've got, they've got a winless Penn State coming up next weekend. So we'll see how that goes. If they struggle there, we could be putting nails in the coffin here of Mr. Harbaugh's career in Ann Arbor. It's likely that's already happening over a little farther east in Detroit, as I would not be surprised. All right, that's enough. If we're looking at the end of the line for Mr. Patricia and his crew there, a 20-0 loss to a backup quarterback and the Carolina Panthers. So, Matthew Stafford, not real concerned about that. He says it's just one game. Yeah, but, you know, it's Carolina Panthers, backup quarterback, 20-0. So, although that that kid, that backup quarterback, apparently was on his way to becoming the MVP of the XFL, STP, you know, RSVP. So he was as apparently a star before he arrived here and looked pretty good as Teddy Bridgewater's backup. So there is that. So that's the end of the line, I guess. I'm it's got to be, doesn't it? For Matt Patricia? Come on. The Lions fans are just... I think the Lions fans probably were the Browns fans were recently, and I'm one of them since I'm from there. They were victorious, and that was good news. But just, yeah, at some point you just go, oh, well, it's that's the way it's going to be, I guess. And you just got to expect it every Sunday that they're going to lose. We'll see what happens the rest of the way out. Coming up in page two of your morning announcements, we'll dive into where we stand COVID-wise and also how the state and a couple of state politicians are raising their national political profiles of late, some of them on the TV over the weekend. I did watch a little TV over this weekend, including the American Music Awards last night. I didn't know who anybody was. Well, the weekend. I think he's the only guy I knew. Katy Perry, I knew her too. But all the up-and-comers, man, I'm so far out of touch on that. Yikes. I'm still waiting on the final episode of the Chris Rock season of Fargo. I think that drops tonight on Hulu. I did start to catch it up on The Crown, and everybody's talking about the new season of The Crown. I'm a full season behind on that. So I started catching up on that. And I also caught a new series on Hulu called No Man's Land. French guy looking for his missing sister in the midst of the war against ISIS in Syria. Pretty intense, riveting story. And if you can keep up with the three different languages and all the subtitles that are happening during that, it's pretty interesting. So, say 6:24. Now the winds are out of the northwest at 11 here as we get started on the 23rd day of November, Thanksgiving week. Good morning from the studio audience here. Spencer is off this week. He's got some vacation time, and good for him. Michael Arney filling in the newsroom remotely. And beyond that, I'll be flying solo here for the most part. Although we've got some friends and guests jumping in here. After the 7 o'clock news, we will be talking with Alyssa Bronikowski. She's with Amazon, and we're going to talk about how to protect your home deliveries this year. After the 8 o'clock news, we'll be speaking with Lisa Cripps Downey from the Berrien Community Foundation. And that will be a good time as well. In the meanwhile, it's page two of your morning announcements, and we'll start you with this week's first COVID casualty. It's Piggin and Grinnin, apparently not surviving the pandemic. General consensus on social media, quote unquote, that sucks. And I couldn't agree more. Back when I was doing that sort of thing, I took quite a number of out-of-towners there for the barbecue. That is a downright shame. And if we lost Piggin and Grinnin, apparently is a going out of business sign in the window there. So apparently also Joe's Cafe, the breakfast place there at Scottsdale, closing, but only, they say, for 3 weeks to just dispense with the notion of having to deal with the lockdown. So they say they're coming back after 3 weeks, and we, of course, wish them the absolute best there. As far as the Piggin and Grinnin thing, like I said, the consensus on social media was that that's awful, that everybody liked, appreciated Piggin and Grinnin, many pinning the blame directly on Governor Whitmer, of course. Although, I don't know, if you expand your horizons a little bit, you may have a little more, a wider perspective on this. Some seem to think that this sort of thing is only happening here in Michigan, and it's all the governor's fault. It's happening all across the country, regardless of the political affiliation of the person in charge of that given state. So, and I saw a listing here recently where Michigan's not even in the top top percentages of states where the, you know, the worst or the most businesses are being affected by this. I think we were like number 28 out of 50 in that listing I saw. So, you know, there's that to consider for just a little bit of perspective. But I think what happened, what may have happened there is, you know, any organization, any business, any restaurant that's concentrating on a business type lunch, and they were. I mean, there was a lot of business type lunch going on at the at Piggin and Grinnin. That whole business model has just kind of dried up because everybody's working from home. So the whole business lunch thing is simply on hold. And anybody who's still concentrating on that is going to struggle for the next little while anyway. By the way, the courts did not help out the restaurant industry, and there will be no immediate reprieve from the three-week shutdown of dine-in service at Michigan bars and restaurants, thanks to a gentleman whom many of you in this area know, former Berrien County Prosecutor Paul Maloney, now U.S. District Judge over in Kalamazoo, said did not completely close the door on getting the shutdown overturned, but he rejected the MRLA, Michigan Restaurant and Lodging Association's, motion for a temporary restraining order. He did, though, set a hearing for the case on November 30th. He said the plaintiffs did not demonstrate that the order's burden on interstate commerce is excessive when balanced against the purported in-state benefits. But they, again, they will still have their day in court on the 30th. One, a national COVID note. Despite a record number of new cases and the CDC recommending against traveling for Thanksgiving, Friday and Saturday were two of the busiest days at U.S. airports since the pandemic started and brought air travel to a halt, which was back in March. More than a million people screened at U.S. airports on Friday. Saturday screenings just a little bit before that, but two-day total of 2 million. Still, that's about 42% of the volume screened on the Friday and Saturday before Thanksgiving last year. But second and third busiest days of U.S. airport traffic since mid-March. Not a COVID casualty, but a casualty nonetheless. The little sheltered picnic table at the south end of Silver Beach. Saw some social media pics over the weekend. Last round of high waves just took it out. So, and is wreaking havoc with the rest of the shoreline, too. Now, I do know that the county and city are working on plans to deal with that erosion. A little too late for that little pavilion, though. Also, as a side note and just a general cautionary tale, stay off the piers. If there's any kind of wave activity, just stay off the piers. It's as simple as that. Also, while we're kind of mentally thinking about those or that area, I have not been down to see it yet, but early pictures coming out of downtown St. Joe look amazing with all the new lights up in the retail district there. You may want to get out of the house and get some fresh air and take a walk downtown when the lights are on, because it looked, like I said, a couple of pictures I've seen. Looking pretty sweet for downtown St. Joe. Now, on to politics. State and a couple of state politicians are raising their national profiles of late. Michigan will be the epicenter of national politics today as the Board of State Canvassers meets to certify general election results showing that Joe Biden won by over 150,000 votes. This is kind of historically a routine sign-off by the board, which must act in a nonpartisan fashion. But there is uncertainty as the president and the RNC have been trying to delay the legitimization of more than 5.5 million Michigan voters. We are two most influential Republican leaders, the House Speaker Lee Chatfield and the Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky, among seven Republican legislators who met with the president on Friday in D.C., Critics say they were beckoned there by Trump to try to influence the election. But Chatfield said on Sunday that that was simply not the case.
And, you know, it was a pleasure to meet with the president of the United States. And I think there was to see the backlash, to see the outrage from the left overtaking a meeting with the president. I think it's pretty ridiculous, right? I mean, before you're Republican or before you're a Democrat, when the president of the United States calls, you take that meeting. So I was happy to have that meeting with him. I was joined by several of my colleagues. But first and foremost, Pete, I was happy to hand deliver a letter to the president regarding COVID funding because we have businesses, you know, in the state of Michigan, as you guys were just talking about in the state of Minnesota, that are still being hurt by our governor's shutdowns and the different lockdowns that are taking place. So we need more help. And we were able to make that request to the president, was happy to do that. But there was this outrage that the president was going to ask us to break the law and he was going to ask us to interfere. And that just simply didn't happen, Pete.
So there you go. That's Lee Chatfield. And then all the Republicans, like Congressman Fred Upton, sounding off on Sunday as well. And he said the voters have spoken when he appeared on CNN and that nobody has come up with any evidence of fraud or abuse.
Well, you know what? The voters have spoken. I mean, here in Michigan, it was 154,000 vote margin by President-elect Biden. No one has come up with any evidence of fraud or abuse. All 83 counties now have certified their own election results. Those will be officially tabulated, or they should be tomorrow. We expect that that process move forward and let the voters, not the politicians, speak.
Does it concern you what the president is trying to do? I mean, do you see it as trying to subvert what you just described?
Well, you know, I wasn't party to the discussions that he had with some of our state legislators, and one of them is one of my state senators. But, you know, they came away from that meeting in a public statement and said that, in essence, that they weren't going to be bullied, that the process is going to move forward, and they weren't going to deny or stay in the way of blocking that official certification.
So there you go, Mr. Upton on CNN over the course of the weekend as well. Generally speaking, the social media responses to that were pretty positive. Certainly there are some, if not many, that disagreed with that. But for the most part, people are saying, way to go, Fred, on that one. So there's that. And then one more thing in page two of your morning announcement here, just adding another chapter to the ongoing Uper identity crisis. It happened again. Last week in a broadcast of Hannity on Fox News, they showed a map that was focused on Wisconsin, but also included both peninsulas of Michigan. The problem was they labeled the Upper Peninsula as being Canada. So. This is an ongoing thing with the UP. Just the latest here in the oversight of major organizations as to where the UP belongs. Last summer, Mountain Dew included the UP as part of Wisconsin in a national promotion that they were doing. A few weeks later, social media's LinkedIn criticized for not having a section for the UP for those creating profiles there, which led to professionals having to choose between Duluth, Green Bay, Saginaw, or Wausau regions. So, no respect for the UP there, eh? It's 6:53.